This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons in Washington. Law enforcement officials have become the de facto facilitators of mental health care in America. That's according to a survey of law enforcement officials last year. And many agree it's because of a glaring problem. Many police officers have little or no training on how to deal with a person with severe mental illness. And that can lead to encounters like this from last summer between a Glendale, Arizona police officer and a man with a mental illness. And a warning about what you'll hear next. We're going to play some audio now from a police officer's body camera. The audio is of a police officer using a taser on a man in distress. And we'll give you a moment. If you want, you can turn us down for about 30 seconds. Again, this is not easy to listen to.
Put your hands on the steering wheel.
You can't hear me. Why?
Step it up.
Why? Huh? Why? When you're out, stop! Don't touch me!
Stop right now! Stop!
Don't hurt me!
Don't
hurt me! Don't hurt me!
The man survived, but these encounters often turn deadly. A Washington Post investigation in 2015 found that police shot and killed a person having a mental health crisis every 36 hours. With protesters calling to defund the police, cities nationwide are exploring ways to separate law enforcement from mental health care. And today we're going to explore what that would look like. First, we'll go to Denver, Colorado. The city has a new program that sends social workers instead of police to mental health emergencies. This conversation is part of our 1A Across America partnership with KUNC in Colorado. It's a collaboration with six public radio stations that brings more local and regional perspectives into the national conversation. Here's 1A Across America producer James Morrison.
Defund the police has become a rallying cry in protests nationwide after a Minneapolis officer killed George Floyd a month ago. Here's what a protester told Voice of America how she interprets that message.
It means making sure that the resources that we put into the police that could be better spent on public health and social workers and public services that our communities desperately need are getting those funds as opposed to just going to the police, which are driven primarily in a lot of ways by violence.
Diverting budget funds from police departments to social workers and public services is exactly what some cities are now doing. San Francisco Mayor London Breed says police will no longer respond to non-criminal calls and mental health emergencies. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio wants to redirect $1 billion away from the city's police budget and into social services. And Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti recently announced that he wants to reallocate $150 million of the LAPD's budget towards health and job programs.
This is bigger than just a budget, but I want you to know we will not be increasing our police budget.
Denver, Colorado launched a program in early June that already does what these cities aim to do. Instead of sending law enforcement to mental health emergencies, a 911 dispatcher sends a two-person team that consists of a paramedic and a mental health clinician. It's called the Support Team Assisted Response, or STAR for short, and it's administered by the Mental Health Center of Denver, not the police department. Carly Ceylon is the mental health clinician on the two-person team.
We have used the criminal justice system as the de facto mental health system for far too long, and it clearly does not work.
Ceylon says the STAR team has more time, more options, and more training when dealing with people with severe mental illness. It's modeled after a more than 30-year-old program in Eugene, Oregon called CAHOOTS, short for Crisis Assistance Helping Out on the Streets. Both STAR and CAHOOTS are non-police response teams. Officers only get involved when a situation has the potential for violence. Here's CAHOOTS intervention worker Ebony Morgan on CNN recently.
Out of our 24,000 calls, only 150 of them did we wind up needing to ask for police to assist us.
Ceylon says a recent encounter with a woman bathing in a public fountain is a good example of how she approached the situation differently than law enforcement.
You know, officers may be concerned about her and take her to the ER for evaluation, right? Which isn't necessarily, you know, the absolute wrong thing to do, but it's not what she needed. After a brief conversation, it was clear that she wasn't bathing in the fountain because she was psychotic or not, you know, based in reality. She didn't have a place to shower and wanted to rinse off.
Denver's STAR program is a six-month pilot funded by a 2018 ballot measure, not redirected police budget funds. But Ceylon says it shows that non-police response teams are not only viable, they can save cities money by diverting people away from jails and unnecessary emergency room visits. Cahoots reports that it saved the city of Eugene roughly $8.5 million annually in public safety spending. These programs may also save lives. People with untreated mental illness are 16 times more likely to be killed by law enforcement, according to the Treatment Advocacy Center. A survey of law enforcement by the same organization found that many police officers would prefer social workers take over mental health emergencies.
Police officers are trained in the police academy to be police officers, not to deal with people with a mental health crisis.
Arnold Wicker Sr. retired as a commander from the Detroit Police Department and now coordinates crisis intervention training for officers in the Detroit-Wayne County area of Michigan. He supports social workers responding to mental health emergencies, but he also supports crisis intervention training for police officers that teaches de-escalation and communication techniques.
If you're talking to somebody and you need to convey them, for example, James, I need you to go with me. We're going to convey you so that you can get some treatment. We're going to convey you to your doctor. We're going to convey you to a clinic. Versus James, you go out with me. First thing James is thinking is, you're a police officer, you've got handcuffs, I'm going to jail. We're trying to get away from that.
Wicker says you can reduce interactions between police and people with severe mental illness, but there will always be some calls that require law enforcement to respond. That's why he sees a place for both police and non-police response teams. But critics point out that crisis intervention trainings have been around for decades, yet police-involved killings remain steady. John Snook is the executive director of Treatment Advocacy Center. He says the best solution is a health system that helps people with serious mental illness before they're in a crisis.
If you are addressing people's needs before they're at that moment, if their family's worried, they're dangerous to themselves or someone else, or the police have to be called, you're really diffusing a lot of these situations that otherwise would end up with police calls.
Snook says preventative mental health treatment is out of reach for most American families, though. Some states cut nearly half their mental health spending following the 2008 financial crisis. Snook also points to America's practice of deinstitutionalization that slashed the number of state psychiatric hospital beds almost 97% over the past half century.
We've effectively set up a system that requires law enforcement to be involved because that's the only place that you can get care. We've effectively said, in order to enter the mental health system, you have to get arrested.
Snook says police and jails have been the band-aids holding our broken mental health system together. He's encouraged by Denver STAR program and others like it popping up across America. Carly Salon of STAR says she hopes the six-month pilot will become a permanent fixture in Denver public safety. For 1A Across America, I'm James Morrison.
That was 1A Across America producer James Morrison. I'm joined now by Colorado State Representative Leslie Herod. Her district includes Central and Northeast Denver. Welcome to the show, Representative Herod.
Thank you for having me.
And Joe Smarrow. He trains police officers in crisis intervention and de-escalation. He was profiled in the 2019 HBO documentary Crisis Cops. Thanks for joining us, Joe.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Joe, can you tell us how much mental health training the average police officer has?
Well, I mean, so the last study I've seen, which has been a few years, but it was between 8 and 16 hours. So we know some academies don't have any. We know some do 8 hours, some do 16 hours, and some, like here in San Antonio, do 40 hours. And so, but I believe the last I saw was the average was somewhere between 8 and 16 hours of mental health training to become a police officer.
Is that enough?
It's nowhere near enough. I've long argued as well that 40 hours isn't enough. But the reality is that it's so much of what we actually do. And so instead of saying, you know, we shouldn't do this or we shouldn't do that, the reality is we should be better prepared to do exactly what we've been doing for, I don't know, the last several decades, which is helping people in crisis.
We are also joined now by Vice senior staff writer Shayla Love. She recently wrote the article about the role of police in mental health care. Her article is titled, Police Are the First to Respond to Mental Health Crises. They Shouldn't Be. Hi, Shayla. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You spoke to a lot of people in your article, and you write, police are not qualified for this responsibility. And we just heard what Joe had to say. When it comes to law enforcement and the mental health system, can you tell us why? Why are police not qualified for this?
Yeah, so I think that he touched on this a little bit. The crisis intervention team training that officers receive, most officers don't receive enough of this. And CIT was always meant to be a complementary approach. I totally agree that the way that the system is set up now, police are often the first on the scene, and so they should have CIT training. I totally agree with that, and I think it's essential. But I think what we also need are alternative response teams and options that aren't the police that can work with the police. So the idea of having perhaps a social worker come with a police officer mm-hmm. and really teaming up with community members who are trained in medicine and psychiatry and in interacting with people who are having a psychotic crisis, I think that teamwork is really important rather than just relying on the police.
And we'll talk much more about that coming up. If law enforcement is the first to respond to a mental health call and you're afraid to call the police because of your race, where do you turn? I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Comedian Nicole Byer doesn't consider herself body positive. She just accepts herself as is.
I hate that there's a name for, like, not hating a part of who you are. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's insane.
Nicole Byer, on her new book, Very Fat, Very Brave, and How to Love Yourself. Listen to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're discussing the role of law enforcement in responding to mental health emergencies. I'm speaking with Shayla Love, senior staff writer for Vice, Representative Leslie Herod, her district includes Central and Northeast Denver, and Joe Smarrow. He trains police officers in crisis intervention and de-escalation. Representative Herod, tell us about this police reform bill that you sponsored, SB 217. It passed on Juneteenth, and it's one of the most sweeping reforms in the nation.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking about that bill. Senate Bill 217, the Law Enforcement Accountability and Integrity Act, is a bill that I authored in direct response to the protests that we were hearing right outside of our door in Denver and then also across the country. In Colorado, we have been demanding law enforcement accountability for a very long time. But it wasn't until this moment, this time in the movement, that we were able to get enough momentum to get that bill through. Senate Bill 217 does a few things. It changes the use of force standards so that officers can be held criminally and civilly liable for their actions. We removed qualified immunity, meaning that if an officer violates someone's constitutional rights, they will be held personally responsible, both criminally and in their pocketbook. We also said that officers have a duty to intervene when they see another officer violating someone's constitutional rights or using excessive force. If they do not intervene, they will be held to criminal and civil standards as well. On top of that, officers who have excessive use of force or leave under investigation will be removed from their post certification, meaning they will not be able to work as a law enforcement officer in the state ever again. And they'll also be put in a public database where people can look to see if that officer has done harm. And then we also require body cameras, which I think is so important. Body cameras will be required for every officer across the board in Colorado. That is also part of the bill and very important.
Joe, do you support reducing law enforcement's role in mental health care as much as possible?
I do. Again, I think it's an important point that needs to be made, that just because you are an adult or a child living with a mental illness, you shouldn't have to interact with police. And one of the issues that we know is that laws are different by state. And so if someone meets a certain criteria, some states have the authority where here, like in Texas, you have to be a peace officer, a guardian, or a judge in order to do what we call an emergency detention or an involuntary commitment on somebody. And so while I wholeheartedly support the fact that we should have clinicians, we should have social workers, we should have subject matter experts in the field of mental health to respond to as many mental health calls as possible, we also have to remember that certain states have certain laws that say, hey, only these select groups of people. And so it goes beyond just who's responding to the calls, but who has the legal authority to actually intervene. Because if someone says, no, I'm not going to go, and I'm threatening to hurt myself or someone else, we have to do something to get them into treatment. and a clinician doesn't have the authority or the power to do that. And so I do believe that we need to have much bigger departments and support when it comes to who's responding to these calls and who's de-escalating, because it shouldn't be a law enforcement response.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with that.
Yeah, let's zoom out a little bit. Shayla, tell us, what are some of the different programs around the country that send social workers instead of police to mental health emergencies? And tell us how effective they are.
Yeah. So it sounds like you guys already talked about CAHOOTS, which, you know, has been lauded as this really amazing alternative response. And there are a bunch of similar programs all over the country. In Dallas, where there's about 1,500 mental health calls per month, a program called Right Care brings social workers to the scene. And that was, once that was implemented, they saw that the percentage of people showing up at the emergency room increased versus those people going to jail instead. And so that sort of suggests that people end up getting medical treatment instead of being incarcerated, which is really great. In Lincoln, Nebraska, there's a program called the Targeted Adult Service Coordination Program. And that's a hotline that police officers can call when they need a trained professional to help them respond to a mental health crisis. There's also a great one in Tucson called the Tucson Police Department Mental Health Support Team. And their job is to both train the officers in CIT and then also have a group of unmarked cars and ununiformed people unarmed who respond to mental health calls.
Donnie wrote to us on Facebook. They said, when you're trained to be a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Police are not therapists. They're enforcers. Joe, I want to play a clip from the 2019 HBO documentary Crisis Cops. This is you actually interacting with a man who's refusing to leave a courtroom.
You're kind of scaring some of these people.
Oh, some of these people are some of the people that are trying.
None of these people know you, okay? And you're kind of scaring them right now.
What up to me?
What about any drug use?
I have done drugs, okay? I
know. When you were using drugs, what'd you use?
I like everything.
I appreciate you being honest. I appreciate you being honest. So, okay, so here's the thing, Keith. You are honest with me, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm worried about you, man. I'm worried about, like...
This is what needs to be done.
Tell me.
This is what needs to be done.
Yeah. Go ahead and sit down, bro.
Well, that sounds different than what we've been talking about. Joe, talk about your approach and how it differs from how other police might have responded to that situation.
Yeah, if I could too, and just because I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, HBO actually released that documentary. It's free right now on YouTube until July 15th, so everyone can actually see that clip plus much more and get the context of it. You know, for me, I've been doing this for almost 11 years. I've been a cop for almost 15 years, and I found my niche. This is my passion. And so while I do agree that police should not be the de facto responders to mental health, selfishly, it's where I found my passion in this work. I focus on people, not the problem. And my goal is always to connect with them, not correct them. And what I mean by that is I've lived my life as a consumer, right? I mean, I've dealt with my own stuff. And when I show up as a police officer, it's not a persona. I'm still a human being that's just doing this job. And so for me, I really do look at the person. I look at not their behaviors. I don't look at to respond to the reasons why I'm there. I understand that there's a much deeper meaning to why things are happening. Are they mentally ill? Are they non-compliant with their medications? Do they not have family support? There's so many layers to this. And so just because someone is acting out or because someone is loud doesn't mean that I'm going to have this aggressive type response. If anything, it means I'm going to slow down and step back, create more space, and be even more patient, because I can do far better by observing than I can by reacting. And I think, you know, that's what's so important about the training is we can't just... To the points that are being made, you know, a lot of police officers in this country are graduating the police academies afraid, and they're paranoid and they're worried. And then they go into these calls where it's someone who's just sick. They're simply symptomatic, and they're needing somebody who's a human being to show up and just humanize this approach. And we can't come in as cops, threatening force or threatening like, well, if you don't do this or that, I'm taking you to jail. And it's like that's not ever going to work or get somebody the treatment that they deserve and that they need. And so I'm really proud of that film, and I'm proud of the fact that, you know, while we shouldn't be doing the work we're doing, maybe we're actually doing a really good job doing it.
We're talking with Joseph Smarrow. He's a law enforcement officer with experience on the San Antonio Police Department Mental Health Unit and Crisis Intervention Team. Also with us is Representative Leslie Harrod, Colorado State Representative in the 8th District, and Shayla Love, Senior Staff Writer for Vice. Now, we're also getting a lot of comments from you listeners. I want to play a voicemail that we got from Beverly in Virginia Beach.
My father suffered from mental health issues his entire life and would frequently have to be taken in to the hospital forcibly. And the police would come to get him, and it was a very disturbing time because they were inexperienced. They were not trained in mental health. He was quite agitated and combative. Fortunately, he went without any incident, but there were occasions where it was pretty touchy. I'm not blaming the police. I'm just saying that they're really not trained to handle those kind of conditions. So I fully support getting the money to the proper personnel that can handle that.
Shayla, you write about parents who call the police on their children because they have a serious mental illness. What happens in these situations?
Yeah, so often it is parents who call the police on their own children. And the reason is that they're frightened and they have nobody else to call. I think what's underlying this whole issue is the fact that mental health care in this country has been winnowed down to just not having any access to it. And so parents, instead of having crisis intervention teams that they can call, non-police teams that they can call, they have to call 911 because they're scared for their children's lives and they're scared for their own lives. And so, I spoke to parents who thought that if they called 911, then their kids could get help. And what happened instead is that their kids end up getting arrested. They end up with a criminal record, and then they end up in and out of jail for the next, 20 years. And it never ends well. I mean, as Leslie said, we can't incarcerate our way out of this. And people get much sicker when they go to jail or prison because it's not a place that a mentally ill person can have access to their medication, to the proper treatment. It's a stressful environment. A lot of people are paranoid. And so people get a lot sicker once they end up in the criminal justice system.
Amber tweeted to us on the same topic. She says, my daughter at 14 years old was handcuffed in her own bedroom with a taser trained to her because I called 911 for help because she told me she was suicidal and I didn't know what to do other than call the emergency number. Joe, I want you to consider a tweet here that we got from G2. They said, respectfully disagree that police aren't caregivers. Many of us, police, receive mental health crisis intervention training as community gardens were often the first responders to these emergencies. Until more mobile mental health crisis teams are available, it's our responsibility. What do you say to that, Joe?
Yeah, I think the fact is that still more than half of the police agencies in this country don't have any CIT training, and those are facts. We tend to think of the larger municipalities and larger departments when we think of police in this country, but so much of our policing agencies are in rural areas, and they just don't receive any CIT training at all. Again, maybe in the academy they get 8 or 16 hours. And so it's an unfair expectation. I'm not blaming police, but what I am saying is that it's unfair that the expectation would be placed that you're going to have somebody show up and respond to a certain type of call when they don't have any training on that situation. Mm-hmm. So that's the first point. I think another issue, too, is that we have to look at the education on this. You know, the fact that parents are having to call 911 because they don't know what else to do, this points to a bigger issue.
Let's take a pause right here, Joe. Yeah, no problem. We'll take a pause. Lots to talk about. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. More from our guests and from you in just a moment.
I'm Gregory Warner with NPR's Rough Translation. So there's a holiday in the Netherlands where every year thousands of white folks wear blackface. Some people are trying to end that tradition, but in a very Dutch way.
You talk until you reach consensus.
Can you fight racism in a way that brings the whole country with you? That's on NPR's Rough Translation.
Now we're talking about the criminalization of severe mental illness in America. Can divesting in law enforcement reverse this? I'm speaking with Shayla Love, Senior Staff Writer for Vice, Colorado State Representative Leslie Harrod, and Joe Smarrow. He trains police in crisis intervention and de-escalation. We're also hearing from a lot of you about this topic. Here's what some of you left in our voicemail inbox.
Hi, this is Jim from Gainesville, Florida.
Hi, my name's Brianna, calling from Utah.
I'm calling from Oklahoma, and I'm anonymous.
I'm a PTSD victim, and I was going through an anxiety attack. Called the police out, and it actually made it worse.
My now ex-husband did call the police on me when I was having a suicidal episode in the bathroom, and the police came and actually handcuffed me. And they were treating me like a criminal. I wasn't even treated like someone who needed actual help.
My daughter lost it one time. She had mental issues. And the police picked her up and, thank God, got her help. And I'll forever be grateful.
I think that police should not be sent out. They should have social workers come out to talk to people and calm them down.
They should be sending out a mental health professional. It's just appalling to me that this is the way police treat people.
Representative Harrod, I want to read this line from Shayla's article. She writes, 6 out of 10 states with the least access to care have the highest rates of incarceration. How do we get to the point where jails and prisons have replaced hospitals as the primary care facilities for people with severe mental illness?
Yeah. Well, when someone, first of all, we don't actually provide enough mental health care before someone's in crisis. It is hard as someone who lives in a community, a city, Denver, to find mental health care and to be able to afford it. And so we don't have enough care before you're in crisis. But when you're in crisis in Colorado, you have a few options. One is to put someone on a 72-hour hold, which, I'm sorry, it's terrifying. It's terrifying, mm-hmm. And it should be the last result. Of course, you can go to the ER, you can call 911, but the quickest way to get support is to, you know, go commit a crime and try to get into a treatment program through a drug court or something like that. That cannot be the option. The incarceration and going through the criminal justice system to get care is not the right approach, and it shouldn't be done. Our mental health providers have years and years of training, whereas our law enforcement officers may have 20 hours of crisis intervention training. It's not enough, and it's not the same. We need to be able to pick up the phone, call 911, and not fear a law enforcement officer using excessive force arriving on the scene. Instead, we should be able to call 911 and have someone who is trained to intervene come and take care of ourselves, our loved ones, our neighbors. That's why we started Caring for Denver, was to make sure we had the funding to do so. But our jails and our prisons are being overrun. The majority of people there have mental health or substance use challenges. The vast majority of women who are in corrections have mental health and substance use charges. We need to change that.
Catherine tweeted us. She said, we need other departments to respond to calls, not just police. We're trained to call 911. Dispatchers can determine which group is the best to respond. Shayla, the representative, talked a bit about this, but tell us what the state is of our mental health care system right now. Is it getting better, worse?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, all of this has to do with, it really goes back to the 1960s when there was this push to deinstitutionalize people with mental illness. And that meant closing a lot of the state-run psychiatric hospitals and asylums. For some good reason, there were many who believed that the people who lived there had really poor quality of life and that patients were really mistreated, and that was true. The problem is that those long-term facilities where you could go for longer than a 72-hour hold, they were never replaced with anything. And since then, we've just been cutting funding to mental health care. In the 80s, Ronald Reagan blocked a lot of grants that allowed states to provide mental health care. And there were even more cuts, $5 billion in state cuts to mental health services from 2009 to 2012, right after the financial crisis. In comparison, in the past 40 years, police spending has increased. And so when we talk about divesting from police and investing in mental health, that involves these response teams. But I would say that any investment in a community is a mental health initiative. That, you know, these 911 response calls to mental health crises is sort of the last phase of a story in which there could be intervention much earlier. It's much more than just having a non-armed person respond. Housing is a mental health care initiative. Education is a mental health care initiative. All of these things combine together to make people more healthy. And so it's not just that we're not funding mental health care. We're not funding all the other things that help make people mentally healthy.
Joe, are there places to take people who need care to the emergency room instead of jail? Or do we need to hire more mental health professionals instead of cops? Or is this a deeper problem?
Yeah, I mean, it is a deeper problem. And again, I love what Shayla was saying to outline the point, because I think for me, it really is an education problem starting very, very early on. We should be educating kids in mental health in our public school curriculum. We should be teaching communities. It should be mandatory that you have to do a basic mental health first aid course in this country. It's just 8 hours, because the reason people are calling the cops or calling 911 on people who are simply symptomatic is because they don't understand what someone in a mental health crisis looks like, and they become afraid. And so then they call the police, and this is where things can go bad. And so if we just, as a country, as a culture, if we would just accept the fact that, you know, we know it's 25% of the American adult population is going to experience a mental health crisis, we should all take a vested interest in educating ourselves on what that looks like, not just when it affects us personally or in our families. And then beyond that, I'll just tell you a quick thing about here in Bexar County. We have a 5,000 bed capacity jail. 12 years ago, we were at capacity. The state was threatening to fine us, and they said, hey, you know, the natural solution is if you have too many people in your jail, then that points to a bigger problem. We should build a bigger jail. Wrong. Somebody from the mental health community came in and said, well, what if we actually took a look at who's in the jail? And to the points that are being made by Shayla and Leslie, it's like we've tried to criminalize behavioral problems. Mm-hmm. And so they looked at how many people were in the jail on petty misdemeanor possession charges. And now we sit at right around 1,000 empty beds pretty consistently. Yeah. And we didn't build a jail. And so it's just we have to take honest looks at who we're incarcerating, why we're incarcerating them, and then where should we shift that funding towards. And it really should be on early intervention, education, and then adequate resources and bed capacity to treat people, because 48 to 72 hours rarely is enough.
Pastor Shayna emailed us and said, I worked for many years as an emergency room paramedic. We dealt with many, many people with mental illness, people who were drunk, high, strung out. Interestingly, we never shot and killed an unarmed person in crisis. And we're running out of time, but Shayla, I have an email here from Mark who describes a personal situation he went through with his wife, very similar to what we've been talking about. But he asks, when can we, citizens, call the police? When should we call the police?
I think at the moment you should call 911 if there's a crime being committed. This is the criminal justice system, and this is a number that we're supposed to call when we need the law to come and enforce our laws. Being mentally ill is not a crime. Wanting to kill yourself is not a crime. Having a psychotic episode is not a crime. And so, like we said, I think there's some collaboration that should be enforced if somebody has a weapon and things feel dangerous. But ultimately, you should call 911 when a crime is being committed, and mental illness is not that.
I want to read this email as well from Christy in support of police. She says, I was an emergency room nurse in a Virginia emergency department for 15 years. We often dealt with volatile situations with patients who had psychiatric problems. Some of the Virginia police had extraordinary verbal skills and were able to talk down patients we had not been able to control. Their combination of street wisdom and authority sometimes worked better than our therapeutic interventions. They saved my life and the patients countless times. Before we go, Representative, I want to know what changes you would like to see in the next 5-10 years from now. Just about a minute to go.
Sure. We need a whole new infrastructure for mental health and substance use and wellness, so that when we do have the alternative response to when you call 911 and you don't get law enforcement, that they don't just automatically take you to the ER either. We need to have places where people can go to get mental health support that's not jail. And if law enforcement has to bring them there, that is welcomed as well. Yes, our law enforcement officers need to be more trained, but so does our community. We need to make sure that we have a robust infrastructure of wellness in our cities and throughout our country, as opposed to what we have now, which is incarcerate or figure out how to get better yourself. Mm-hmm. That cannot be the answer. So what I want to see is I want to see schools having therapists in every single school, as opposed to school resource officers, we call them cops, in the schools. Those are things that we need so that we can actually help people early on and show people that getting help for their challenges is not a bad thing. It's not taboo. We can do it, and we can do it together.
Daniel emailed us, can we change the mantra to fund the second responders? I appreciate all the police attempt to do, but we ask them to do too much. So defund the police? Yes, as long as we fund the second responders with the diverted funds. I've been speaking with Shayla Love, senior staff writer for Vice, Colorado State Representative Leslie Harrod, and Joe Smarrow. He trains police officers in crisis intervention and de-escalation. Thank you all for joining us. This conversation was produced by James Morrison in collaboration with KUNC in Greeley, Colorado, one of our 1A Across America partner stations. Special thanks to KUNC reporter Lee Patterson for helping with this show. 1A Across America is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for listening. This is 1A.